Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Texas Governor Greg Abbott has threatened to arrest state Democratic lawmakers who fled the Lone Star State this week to deny the GOP-controlled assembly there the quorum they need to conduct state business. The issue at hand? Pending voting restrictions. On Monday, Chris Turner, chair of the Texas House Democratic Caucus, explained their motives.
It breaks our heart that we have to do it. But we do it because we are in a fight to save our democracy. The nationwide Republican vote suppression efforts, anti-voter efforts, is coming to a crisis point in the state of Texas right now.
Governor Abbott said that he won't stop pressing for a vote.
So if these people want to be hanging out wherever they're hanging out on this taxpayer-paid junket, they're going to have to be prepared to do it for well over a year. As soon as they come back into the state of Texas, they will be arrested. They will be cabined inside the Texas Capitol until they get their job done.
Republican state lawmakers across the country, including Ohio, have introduced their own restrictions, tapping the false Trump narrative that the 2020 presidential election was stolen. Joining us to talk national politics, Ken Rudin, host of Ken Rudin's Political Junkie podcast. We'll have a link to that at WOSU.org/allsides. Welcome back, Ken.
Thank you, Ann.
All right. So state lawmakers from Texas and other states are looking to Congress to do something at the federal level to protect voting rights at the state level. What's the chances anything like that will happen?
Well, that's exactly the dynamic that's at stake. I mean, by fleeing the state of Texas, the House Democrats know that they're not going to get their way. They're not going to convince Republicans to change the bill. And as once this 30-day special session ends, as Governor Abbott says, he'll just have another 30-day special session. And obviously, the Democrats can't keep leaving the state. What the Democrats are doing by coming to Washington, they're trying to make the case to implore the Democrats and the Democratic-controlled Congress, nominally controlled, it's 50-50 in the Senate. It's very also very meager advantage in the House. But they're trying to convince them, look, do what you can to protect voting rights, because Republican legislatures throughout the South, but not only the South, the Midwest as well, Ohio, Iowa, Michigan, and then Arizona, other states, are doing things to impede and imperil of voting. So they're trying to make the case, look, you gotta pass, if you have to get rid of the filibuster, then do so. But what you've got to do is pass a federal national voting rights bill to stop this amount of Republican bills that are curtailing the vote around the country.
And the president has responded. How? I know he didn't bring up the filibuster the other day.
Well, yesterday, I mean, it was a very impassioned speech. I'm not exactly sure what it was supposed to accomplish, because, again, it's not going to convince Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema that, okay, let's get rid of the cinema. We can't get rid of the cinema, but we can't get rid of the filibuster. But I kind of think that what Biden was doing in his speech in Philly yesterday, which was very impassioned. I mean, just talking about the threat to democracy and all this strong rhetoric. He's basically telling, you know, the progressive wing of the Democratic Party has been saying that the Democrats are too soft on the Republicans. They're not going strong enough on fighting to protect voting rights. I think Biden's speech, if nothing else, was designed to allay those progressive fears.
And you mentioned the margins in the Senate and the House are very narrow and narrowly in favor of Democrats. I mean, is this a topic that they want to take up at the federal level?
Well, it has to be, because it's very possible and perhaps even likely that the Democrats are going to lose control of the House in 2022. Redistricting alone, the gerrymandering that's going on in the states around the country alone, will net the Democrats at least maybe 4, 5, 6 seats. And that's really the whole Democratic majority will net Republicans these seats. And that's basically what the Democratic margin is right now. So they feel they've got to get something done now, especially now, because next year is a political year and they may not have the majority in 2023. They've got to get something done now. Whether they can, whether they will, whether they have the will to do it is another thing. You know, Republicans, when Biden said yesterday in Philadelphia to the Republicans, have you no shame? They don't have shame because it's working what they're doing. They are in 17 states. There have been 22 pieces of legislation passed that will curtail the vote and nominally hurt Democrats and people of color. And so why would you have shame if it's working for your party? So, I mean, Biden doesn't have many, you know, quills left on the armor, but what he's got to do is use the bully pulpit to get Democrats in Congress to get something done.
This you're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News, and we're talking national politics with political journalist Ken Rudin, host of Ken Rudin's Political Junkie podcast. Questions or comments, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Now, all this voting legislation, you said in 17 states, 22 bills to curtail the vote, it's another sign of the continued sway that the former president has over the Republican Party. I mean, this the narrative about a stolen election, the narrative about fraudulent voting, even though it's false, and it's, you know, sure there's been a few votes cast that were illegal, but it's a fraction of a fraction of a fraction of a percent. So what does this say now that they're still pursuing this about the president or the former president?
Clearly, what the Republicans are doing in the legislatures in the South is a solution for which there is no problem. I mean, Governor Abbott of Texas has said in the past that when he was attorney general, he prosecuted many illegal voting schemes. That's not true. I mean, right. You know, even Trump, when Trump was elected president, he formed a commission led by Chris Kobach and other stalwarts of democracy to investigate illegal votes, and there were none, and that's why the commission disappeared. The fact is, you're absolutely right, Ann. It is to tell Donald Trump, we're with you on the fact that the election was stolen. Look, remember when Donald Trump lost the popular vote in 2016, mm-hmm. he said it was because people who voted illegally. Now, that's ridiculous. I mean, he lost by over 3 million votes right. against Hillary Clinton, but he said it was illegal votes, illegal voters. That's not what happened, but that is the Republican narrative. That's the Trump narrative, and Republicans will do everything they can to stay on the same page as the former president.
The former president pushed the narrative again and vociferously in his speech on Sunday at the Conservative Political Action Conference, CPAC. News reports say that the gathering was saturated with that theme. So he's still lamenting what he sees as an unfair loss.
Not only is he complaining about the stolen election, but one of the themes at that CPAC event in Texas, I guess it was in Dallas, mm-hmm. is that a good percentage of the people who attended fully expect Trump to be, quote, reinstated as president by August. Now, if that doesn't happen, and let me tell you, let me give you an exclusive on your show, it's not going to happen. But if people think it's going to happen and it doesn't happen, I mean, we could see more and more January 6th kind of events around the country when people are saying that our democracy is being taken away from us.
And I'm glad you brought up the January 6th thing, because another theme was at the CPAC was alternative recollections of the insurrection of the U.S. Capitol by pro-Trump mob that interrupted the congressional recognition of President Biden's victory.
It's just so remarkable. I mean, the fact that these guys and gals stormed the Capitol and talked about things, hang Mike Pence, hang Nancy Pelosi, and Republicans are not so outraged that they basically filibustered the establishment of a commission to find the root causes. You know, that woman, that poor unfortunate protester, the woman who crashed through the Capitol and was shot dead by the police, mm-hmm. she's now a right-wing hero. She's a Trump hero. Donald Trump has said that she's an American martyr, an American hero. She was trying to undo the democratic ideals, and then suddenly people like her become the hero to the right and to the pro-Trump mob. It's just remarkable.
Charles in London, you're on the air. Hi, Charles.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about the framework of the Republican Party, and Tim Ryan hit it right on the head. This is not a functional institution. We're talking about politicians, which are pushed by punditries, which are funded, which are motivated by think tanks, which are funded by an oligarchical plutocracy, which doesn't care about sociological, environmental, or economic sustainability. And this is a major problem because, and it's all because of the inept messaging of the Democrats. We're not trying to reform the filibuster. We're trying to restore the filibuster to the type of filibuster, talking filibuster, that Lyndon Baines Johnson gave us the Voting Rights Act with. And so the whole thing is that this framework has fabricated a culture war, and they'll do it again, whether it's, you know, critical race theory or any other thing. And the messaging on the progressives has got to become more important. Biden and Harris have got to use the bullet pulpit just like Trump did, but for facts, not for fiction. And I got to take my answer off the air. You all have a great day.
You
Thank
too, Charles.
You very much.
Thanks. So what about the Democrats' role in all of this, as Charles has said?
Well, first of all, if you listen to what Charles said in the beginning of his comments about his criticism of, I guess it was of the Republican Party, in all my years of covering politics, that's the kind of criticism I've heard of both parties for years, that they're not attuned to the will of the people. They're backed by oligarchy and corporatists and things like that. But the Republican Party is not the Republican Party of days past. I mean, when George W. Bush, I mean, whatever you think about the Bushes and McCain and Romney, even Ronald Reagan, this Republican Party is nothing like it. They have no desire to compromise. Mitch McConnell has said that one, if he when he becomes majority leader again, he will not approve any Joe Biden Supreme Court justice. He said that his role is to defeat everything about the Biden administration. There's no interest in governing. There's no interest in cooperating. There's no interest in making America great again. It is just stopping the other side. It's they're the bad guys, we're the good guys, and we need to stop people. And that's not what government is all about. So there are so many progressives who are so frustrated by the lack of I don't know what the word is, what the Democrats are doing, what the Republicans are doing. Look, what they did when they blocked Merrick Garland for the Supreme Court, when they all the things they did that Mitch McConnell and the Republicans did, they just did it. Was it unheard of? Was it an affront to history? Sure, but they did it anyway. Democrats seem to be so afraid of, well, you know, something, it may not look good, but They've gotta have a bigger backbone. And I don't know how they do that, given the fact that it's a 50-50 Senate, and at least two of their members, Sinema and Manchin, won't go along with any effort to reform the filibuster. The only thing, and Biden mentioned this yesterday, really the only thing they have is to make sure they elect more Democrats in 2022. And again, that's gonna be a tall order.
We're going to take a quick break. My guest is Ken Rudin, political journalist, host of Ken Rudin's Political Junkie podcast. We'll have a link to that on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. If you want to join the conversation, 614-292-8513. You can also email us at allsides@WOSU.org. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher, talking national politics with political journalist Ken Rudin, host of the Political Junkie podcast. We're talking about how Democrats have responded to a litany of concerns with the new Republican Party that has emerged and is now led by former President Donald Trump. Questions or comments, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Ken, is there a tipping point in your mind? I mean, the party has changed from, you know, my days growing up in it myself. It's changed a lot just in the last 20 years. And I'm wondering, is there a tipping point for rank and file? So outside of the CPAC ilk?
I don't know. I mean, the only thing that would change things if, for example, if Donald Trump were thoroughly defeated in 2020 and the Republican Party took a thrashing, as Goldwater did in 64, then a lot of moderates came out of the election after 64 and said, wait a second, our path is not the right way. But the Republican Party didn't get take a thrashing, a big defeat in 2020. Mm-hmm. Trump did lose, but maybe a few states going the other way would have given him the presidency again. The Republicans gained at least 11 seats in the House. Mm-hmm. A lot of people thought that the Republicans were going to lose a lot of seats in the Senate. They didn't. They picked up governorships and they picked up state legislatures around the country. So for all the talk about, I mean, look, if it weren't for the COVID vaccine and the Trump reaction to it, or lack of reaction to it, mm-hmm. it's very possible he could have won again. The Republicans would have gotten a big victory. So there was no lesson learned by Trump's defeat. And so, and plus the fact that when he, if he wants to embarrass a Republican or say something bad about him, he or her, he will do so, and that will affect that Republican's chances for re-election. Look what's happening to Anthony Gonzalez up in Northeast Ohio. He's a conservative Republican, a rising star in the party, but he happened to be one of the 10 Republicans who voted to impeach the president, and that is absolutely unacceptable to the president, who's now backing a former aide to run against Gonzalez in next May's primary. So you cross Trump at great peril to your own political future.
Yeah, that former Trump aide Max Miller is challenging Gonzalez in 2022 Republican primary. Let's see, Susan in Omaha, you're on the air. Hi, Susan.
Hi. My comment is the president should use his power as president where he doesn't need Congress. He could declare Election Day a national holiday just by executive order. And another thing he could do is start issuing a nationwide ID so people have the ID. In other countries, they issue the IDs to people. And another thing, the Justice Department should go after some of these new laws. But none of those require Congress's help, so we could do that without trying to appease Joe Manchin or trying to get some some honorable Republicans. So that's my question. Comment. Like, he could use his power.
Yeah, I was going to say, Susan, you're absolutely right. Matter of fact, the Justice Department under Merrick Garland has been going after these state laws that may have gone too far or maybe violating either state laws or the Constitution. So the Justice Department has been active in that. I'm not convinced. I mean, I should know this answer, but I don't know if the president could decide that that Election Day is by executive order that it's a national holiday and vote all day long. I'm not sure about that. As far as voting ID, well, I'm of two minds of that. First of all, most Americans feel there should be some kind of a voter ID when voters go to the poll because they don't want, they need some kind of verification. And even Democrats in the bill that's collapsing in the House, in the Senate, the Democrats are saying that, okay, we do acknowledge that some voter ID is needed. But the fact is that no matter how many concessions the Democrats make regarding this bill, there's no question that the Republicans are going to stop it any way possible. And that's why, as you say, Susan, you need a combination of what the Justice Department is doing to battle these states that are restricting the vote and get some kind of a vote. There's a plan, there's some talk about having the voting rights bill in Congress be independent of the 60 vote filibuster proof majority. I don't think that's gonna go anywhere, but the Democrats just need to come up with some plan. And one thing I think is interesting, it was announced that Joe Manchin is going to meet with the Texas Democrats who fled the state to come to Washington.
Yeah.
Joe Manchin is going to meet with them. And that's a good sign, considering the fact that Manchin seems to be the roadblock for complete Democratic unanimity.
Susan, thanks a lot for that call. Appreciate it. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. If you want to join the conversation with Ken Rudin, political journalist, host of Ken Rudin's Political Junkie podcast. All right. So Republican state, you know, as far as Ohio politics go, Republican state Senator Matt Dolan has now waded into the pool of Republicans seeking to replace Rob Portman. It's a crowded pool, but he's kind of a horse of a different color from the others. That includes former state treasurer Josh Mandel, former Ohio Republican Party leader Jane Timken, Cleveland businessman Bernie Moreno, investment banker Mike Gibbons, and, of course, author and venture capitalist J.D. Vance, all of whom have embraced the former president. In fact, they're kind of, you know, in a competition to kiss the ring. Donald Trump has yet to endorse a candidate, but Dolan's unlikely to be his guy. So can he win in Ohio without that Trump stamp of approval?
Well, you know something, that's news to me. I didn't know about Dolan's candidacy.
Hasn't officially announced. He's, you know, like I said, wading in. He's thinking about it.
Well, I can't imagine in this day and age, given what the Republican Party is, that a non-Trump Republican can win the nomination. But actually, that's what happened in New Jersey in the June primary for governor this year. And there's, you know, New Jersey is one of two states that are having gubernatorial elections. And the Republican who wants to be governor was not a big Trump supporter, but because it was a split field, he won the nomination. So I don't know. I mean, it's fascinating what's going on in Ohio, because not only the Max Miller, Anthony Gonzalez race, but the battle for the Senate. Everybody's waiting to see who Trump will endorse. And he has a way of making things happen. I mean, look at Ron DeSantis in Florida. Ron DeSantis was a congressman about to lose his race for governor in Florida in 2018. And Trump came in with a late endorsement, and somehow DeSantis beat the favored Republican and was elected governor. So it would be interesting to see what, I mean, Ohio was fascinating because there are very few opportunities for the Democrats to pick up his seat. Mm-hmm. Tim Ryan seems to be the consensus choice for the Democrats. Mm-hmm. I don't know if he can win against a popular Republican, but if the Republican Party eats itself up in the primary, he has a shot. So that'll be fascinating to see. But you know that Trump is going to play a major role.
Let's see. Scott in Delaware, you're on the air. Hi, Scott.
Oh, hey, Ann. Hey, Ken. This goes back a little bit just before the break when you guys were talking about how outrageous the Republicans were doing some things. I wanted to point out the opposite is the truth for the Democrats. Back when Senator Al Franken from Minnesota was accused of a impropriety, he very, very quickly laid down and gave up his seat without any fight at all. The Republicans have gone through such more outrageous things than that, and they cling to their seats just like this. They would never think of giving up anything in the name of justice or what's right. And on a side note, too, I wanted to point out how Mitch McConnell, during the Trump administration, he did set aside, Ken, correct me if I'm wrong, but he set aside that part of the filibuster where he only needed a small majority to be able to make judgeship appointments, because he had a 52-48. And it was not enough for the filibuster, but he appointed over 100 federal judgeships on the bench. So he set aside the filibuster for that, and nobody ever talks about that. So there's those two issues, Al Franken and Mitch McConnell setting aside that part of the filibuster. What do you guys think about that?
Well, Scott, you mentioned a lot of things, and a lot of things are interesting. I'll see if I can recall everything you said. First of all, regarding Al Franken, mm-hmm. Al Franken left basically because the women, the Democratic women in the Senate, turned on him. And he basically would have loved due process, but basically he felt that the tide was so much against him that he felt he had no choice but to resign. But another Democrat, Andrew Cuomo, is in a similar situation. He's the governor of New York, and a lot of women have come forward talking about sexual impropriety, and Cuomo won't step down. Democrats in the state in New York are talking about possible impeachment, but Cuomo is not giving up. But you're absolutely right. There are some Republicans, like Madison Cawthorn, the freshman Republican in North Carolina, who like 100 women have come forward and said that he was sexually inappropriate with them, and he has no desire, you know, interest in resigning at all. Matt Gaetz, God knows what he may be involved with, and he's not leaving either. So so there's that as well. Now you said something else at the end
about the filibuster that that Mitch McConnell manipulated.
What's so canny and clever about Mitch McConnell is that he always makes things seem like it was the Democrats' fault when the Republicans were holding up a lot of Obama judgeships and appointments.
Right.
Harry Reid, the majority leader, said, okay, we're going to get rid of part of the filibuster. And that meant about judgeships. So the Democrats got rid of the filibuster for judgeships. And then lo and behold, when the Republicans took the Senate, after 2014, or was it 2014? Yeah, it was after 2014. The Republicans had... thanks to Harry Reid getting rid of part of the filibuster, Donald Trump was able to push through all these Supreme Court, all these court nominees and things like that.
Right.
So basically, that's the risk that the Democrats have right now. If they get rid of the filibuster, what happens when the Republicans take control of the Senate or a Republican is back in the White House? But Democrats say, look, it may be worth it because they're going to do things anyway. Look what they did with Merrick Garland. We might as well take our chances, get rid of the filibuster, get Biden's agenda passed in the little time we have left, and take our chances with 2023.
614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org if you have a question or comment for my guest, Ken Rudin. Thanks to Scott in Delaware for that. I'm thinking about we're just about at the 6 month mark of Biden's presidency. What do you make of it at this point, Ken?
Well, he doesn't hold our attention like Donald Trump did, and that's good and bad. He is not Mr. Excitement, but he was never Mr. Excitement. He will never have soaring rhetoric like Obama, Clinton, or Reagan had. I'll tell you one thing: his plan to get all Americans vaccinated, while it's only 48% of Americans have been fully vaccinated, he has pushed that thoroughly. And I mean, one of the reasons I and so many of my friends and almost everybody I know have been vaccinated because of the federal government's plan. He has gotten Congress, maybe just the Democrats, but to push through a bill that for all the people who have suffered financially because of the pandemic get some kind of largesse from the government. He's not inspiring. Sometimes his speeches are just absolutely deadly. And even yesterday when he gave his speech, people said, well, why didn't he mention the filibuster? Why didn't he mention Trump? Mm-hmm. But he has a good heart. He has a decent heart. He knows how people are suffering. It comes from the kind of middle-class background that he appreciates what people are going through. And look, to be honest with you, look at the rise in prices. I mean, if you want to blame, who do you blame for the rise of prices? You have to blame the president. I mean, if the prices were going down, if jobs were doing, more people were getting jobs, you credit the president. If the prices go up, you blame the president. And the fact is restaurant costs and used cars are just spiraling out of control. And that could last beyond the next year's elections, which could danger the Democrats. But I mean, I think maybe if I was writing his obituary right now, I would write, he meant well, and he does mean well, but I think American people need more than he means well.
Okay. So, the infrastructure plan, it's the 11 Republican senators at first signed off on an outline of the plan. It proposed to pump about $600 billion in new spending for hard infrastructure, you know, the roads and bridges, blah, 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 and about a total of $1.2 trillion over the next 8 years. He needs 10 GOP votes, and now five of those have backed off. They said they're not committed after all. What happened to the good old days when Republicans and Democrats agreed on infrastructure spending? I mean, that was something, it was a no-brainer. In fact, I often wondered during the Trump administration, why in the world does he keep bringing up infrastructure, push that through? That probably could have helped him a lot in 2020.
I agree with you. First of all, when you were just describing that, you were saying bridges and roads and blah, blah, blah. I know you didn't mean blah, 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 because it is crucial. I mean, I tell you, I've driven on that famous bridge from Cincinnati to Kentucky, and I suddenly believe in God every time I'm on that bridge because I just feel like it's gonna. And look what happened. I mean, the roads are. It should not be a Democratic or Republican thing. I think one of the lasting legacies of Rob Portman's career could be this infrastructure bill, because while so many progressives have been disappointed with Portman over the years, they always think his rhetoric never matches with reality. But Portman knows Congress. He knows the government. He, you know, he served as Bush's budget director, his finance stuff. He was in the House and in the Senate, and he's retiring, so he doesn't have to worry about reelection. His goal is to get 10 Republicans to back this bill, which gives them 60 to avert a filibuster. The reason you ask why the Republicans won't, what happened to the Republican Party in the past, Mitch McConnell just won't do it. Mitch McConnell doesn't want to give Joe Biden a victory, even though it would be a victory for the American people. What Rob Portman has to do is find five more Republicans in addition to the five he already has. And that's going to be a tough sell. I mean, it's one thing to say that, this bipartisan group is working well together. But unless he can get 10 Republicans, just like everything else, it's going to fall by the wayside.
My guest is political journalist Ken Rudin, host of Ken Rudin's Political Junkie podcast. We'll have a link to that on our website at WOSU.org. If we're talking national politics today, if you have something you want to talk about, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@WOSU.org. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. President Joe Biden travels to Ohio next week for a CNN town hall meeting in Cincinnati. He has a lot on his plate, of course. We've been talking about that lately, to wit, immigration and infrastructure. We're talking national politics with political journalist Ken Rudin, host of the Political Junkie podcast. And you can find a link to that at WOSU.org/allsides. President Biden, I wanted to talk a little bit about the immigration issue. And, Vice President Kamala Harris has been getting a lot of flack from people about that. What is she doing? What's your sense about where that ranks in the national psyche?
Well, if you're looking for a report card on President Biden, you're looking at the number of migrants at the border, which have topped. In many cases, the numbers during the Trump administration, perhaps they are coming because they think they may get a better deal with Biden. But basically, my theory is this. Yes, Kamala Harris is getting a lot of heat for what she's doing. Yes, she's also in an unwinnable position trying to work on the immigration situation that has bedeviled presidents going back to as long as I can remember. But my gut feeling tells me that Joe Biden is not, this is not brain science here, that Biden is not going to run for re-election in 2024, that Kamala Harris is going to be the Democratic standard bearer. And I think by giving her these tough assignments to show that, I think it'll show if she, assuming she runs in 2024, you know, she'll be able to show the American people, this is what I worked on. This is a crucial issue that's bedeviling presidents for years, and I'm going to make, I'm going to make major changes here. And, you know, this is part of my reason why you should stick with the Democrats in 2024. And can I just interrupt for one quick second? And I'm sorry to do this, but I was listening to the, during the break, I was listening to the commercial about from On Point about the vaccination.
Yeah.
You know, you and I were talking about infrastructure, and how could, I mean, this, how could it be a Democratic or a Republican issue? It's, you know, it's safe roads, it's safe bridges, it's highways, it's things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Vaccinations are the same things. I mean, there are people dying of this new variant of COVID that is taking over so many states, and it's really a lot in the states that don't have high vaccination rates, which are, which coincidentally not, is, are also Trump states. The fact that people are not getting vaccinated because Fox News and Tucker Carlson and others say they shouldn't be doing it because it's a fraud, this is just causing terrible misfortune to people who are getting sick. The hospitalizations are rising, COVID cases are rising, and a lot of people are not getting vaccinated because of politics. That upsets me tremendously. So is it a defeat for President Biden that he hasn't gotten the 70% in, you know, vaccinated by July 4th? I said defeat for the country. I think Biden has done what he can do, but it just irks me. I'm sorry to...
Well, I mean, that's, I was going to bring it up. There's a spike in COVID cases now and hospitalizations in red states. The difference from a year ago is that the patients are younger and sicker and unvaccinated because now we have the option to be vaccinated. And I'm wondering how you think the changing demographics of the victims of the pandemic might affect what it has become, as you said, an intensely polarized political issue of public health.
Well, see, I mean, it's been the case from the beginning when Donald Trump said, don't wear masks, or this is nothing more than the flu, or this is a Democratic plot to embarrass me. Many people believed him and many people died. So I just, it just breaks my heart. But the fact, when you look at the states, Tennessee, Arkansas, Alabama, Kansas, Louisiana, these are all, not coincidentally, red states, Trump states, and people just saying, well, this is the wrong thing to do, but it's just... It just—it's terribly, terribly heartbreaking. As if we didn't learn the lesson of the awful year of 2020.
Can you see, you know, if things do surge again, and they are surging, they can, you know, target very closely, right down to the precinct, right, where the surges are occurring, and you know, and they're in where the unvaccinated people are. Can you see, like, if we get another bad surge with this variant, and if more people are affected by it, can you see elected officials risking reverting back to a year ago, doing the shutdowns again, having mask mandates again, after all said and done?
I absolutely do. And let's be honest, I mean, let me add Nevada to that list, which is which was a Biden state. It wasn't a Trump state. But absolutely, I mean, if this if hospitalizations jump back to 2020 numbers, you can't sit still. I mean, I think a lot of people feel that, oh, wow, we sure dodged a bullet. And I mean, not that 600,000 deaths is dodging a bullet, but a lot of people feel that the risk is over. It's not over, especially among those, as you say, the young, the unvaccinated. And that is, it's criminal. And if to think that we can go through this all over again is, and that's what's going to happen. Businesses will have to shut down. Restaurants will have to shut down. Public events will have to shut down if this spreads. And I don't know why people don't realize this by refusing to get vaccinated. I don't know. It just astounds me.
Susan in Upper Arlington, you're on the air. Hi, Susan.
Hi. I think you may have just started to touch on this.
Mm-hmm.
I have small kids under 12 who can't get vaccinated. They start school in mid-August, and I just don't understand why at a national and even at the state levels, the messaging isn't geared for adults to protect our kids. Wearing their masks and getting vaccinated is what we need to do to protect our kids until they can get vaccinated.
In fact, I'm pretty sure the Ohio General Assembly in the budget bill, and it might have been a separate legislation. I can't tell this time of year. It's so crazy around here with the bills. But they passed a law saying that school districts can't require vaccination of students when they return to classes in the fall. Ken Rudin?
Yeah, and I'm also thinking, I think it takes like 5 weeks or so for the vaccinations to take effect. So what happens if, so 5 weeks from now, as Susan points out, all these kids are in school, they're unvaccinated, they're in an enclosed area together.
There's a new variant out there, yeah.
Exactly, but it's our children, but then I think of Sandy Hook in Connecticut when second graders and third graders were slaughtered by people with guns. And I would say, well, how could you let this happen? These are our children, but it doesn't seem to make a difference.
Interesting. Susan, thanks a lot for that call. Let's see. From Chris, he writes, here's the root of the problem. Obama's election and losses in the culture wars have left a lot of Americans, which he puts in quotation marks, with a kind of PTSD. As far as I can tell, the willingness to jeopardize democracy, allow more COVID deaths, and the rest of it can be attributed to an overwhelming need to jerk reality's leash. Well, reality's leash on them has snapped. So I'm not quite sure.
Me neither. But yeah, I don't know exactly. The fact that when Obama was president, he was not the most popular guy in the world in 2010 and 2014, the midterm elections. Republicans did amazingly well because a lot of people felt that Obama and the Democrats overreached. Mm-hmm. So when you have, when you have the failures of Obama, you have Donald Trump promising the moon, and then you have these QAnon Republicans who feel that Trump is not going far enough and saying that, we've got to protect this civilization of ours. It's with or without Trump, the future looks dim, shall we say. I love coming on your show and saying that we're doomed. But sometimes, Henny Penny, right? But sometimes I really feel that way.
Oh, boy. John and Marion, you're on the air. Hi, John.
Hi, Ann. How are you? Hi, Ken.
Fine, thanks.
John?
I just wanted to make a comment that I think, to me, the suggestion that the issue is a filibuster and what kind of political wrangling or maneuvering should we be doing to try to get things done, that's what's wrong. There was a time in our country that I remember, I'm in my late 50s, where you could have a Republican as a president, a Democrat as a Speaker of the House, and they ran the country, or vice versa. To me, at least, I think we've forgotten that we need to be Americans first. We have adversaries. We have threats in the world. There are certainly other countries that I think enjoy watching us be this polarized, country that just wants to be at each other's throats every opportunity we can get. There has to be a time in the near future where I think we get back to being Americans and, we get things done. That's who we really are. So that's my comment.
Okay, John.
John, I'm more confident of the past than I am of the future. that's very clever. I'm old enough to remember Lyndon Johnson and Everett Dirksen, the Republican leader in the Senate, working together for the benefit of the country. Ronald Reagan and Tip O'Neill were not best friends, but they got a lot of things done and they had a drink afterwards to talk about their differences. Now the thought of a Democrat and a Republican having a drink together is treasonous. Mm-hmm. And they'll invite primary challenges from the opposite side. I am not confident that this is going to change anytime soon. Not when you have a Republican Party that still believes that the election of 2020 was stolen, a Republican Party that would still be very happy with Donald Trump running again in 2024. I think we have a long way to go before the days from the past when both parties cared about the future of the country and less about their party comes to fruition.
John, thanks for that call. We are running out of time. There's a couple things I wanted to ask you about, Ken. President Biden has said that he supports the ongoing protests against the Cuban government in Havana and elsewhere in the country, interestingly, but he's not signaled that he's interested in revisiting the Obama-era lifting of the U.S. embargo against Cuba. Trump reversed that back when he took office. What's your sense about the optics of Cuba now in contrasting it with, you know, the Obama days?
Well, first of all, in fairness, Obama did lift a lot of the restrictions on stuff with Cuba, and the government did not change at all. Nothing really changed. So, so you could say that, you know, they are good intentions from the American government, but ultimately nothing happens. Mm-hmm. What I do think is interesting is a lot of people in Cuba are protesting because they're not getting able to get a vaccination. When I think of Laura Ingraham and Tucker Carlson on Fox News saying, "Don't get vaccinated because it's a Democratic plot," and here you have Cubans demonstrating in the streets. By the way, Donald Trump said he supports the Cubans demonstrating 100%. You have them demonstrating because they're not getting access to vaccinations. Mm-hmm. That shows that something's really crazy here. But I don't know what the U.S. could do. I mean, Haiti is calling for U.S. troops in the aftermath of the assassination. America wants freedom in Cuba, in Nicaragua, in Haiti. I think it would be great if we had some freedom in the United States, especially when it comes to voting rights. Maybe that should be the ultimate focus.
All right. And the late Edwin Edwards died this week. He served a total of four terms as governor, spanning, I think, like three decades, none of them without scandal and controversy. He was quite a character. He was an old-timey Southern Democrat. What stands out to you?
Well, of course, he spent four terms as governor and four terms in the penitentiary. But I mean, what stands out the most is that in 1991, when he ran for governor against David Duke. I mean, think of this guy, Edwin Edwards, very charming, but so corrupt. And he was a rogue and lovable, but corrupt, corrupt as sin. And David Duke, who talks about Jews and blacks and Hispanics, and they all don't deserve to live. What a choice. My favorite Edwin Edwards quote is that he was comparing himself. What's the difference between himself and David Duke? And he said, "Well, we're both wizards under the sheets," which was vintage Edwin Edwards.
In referencing to David Duke's connection with the Ku Klux Klan. All right, yeah.
He was a longtime Klansman. Mm-hmm. So welcome to Louisiana politics. I mean, it's always been wacky, and there are very few people like Edwin Edwards. As crazy was, strong civil rights, he backed civil rights when it wasn't popular. He was elected to Congress in 1964 when Lyndon Johnson came in. Mm-hmm. He was on my political junkie show a few years ago. I'm going to replay that interview this week.
Oh, but okay.
He was a character, and there are very few people like him before and certainly not today.
Yeah, four terms. You could only legally serve two terms in a row. And he took a break or something like that and came back.
Well, actually, he was defeated in the third term, and then he came back four years later. And in 1991, he lost in 87. In 1987, the governor, the Republican governor, Buddy Romer, finished third in the primary. It was Duke and Edwards. And as a matter of fact, I got a barf bag from that campaign because the choice was so abysmal. But To their wisdom, Louisiana voters voted for the right guy.
So we only have about 30 seconds left, but I'm wondering, are there any more out there, the likes of Edwin Edwards left?
Not really, because of the people who think they're Edwin Edwards, like the Matt Gaetzes of the world, you know, some of these so-called contrarians. There's a meanness to them. There wasn't a meanness to Edwin Edwards. He would make fun of himself as much as anything. By the way, in the 10 seconds we have left, still progressives are still talking to this day about Stephen Breyer retiring from the court. They fear that what happened with Ruth Bader Ginsburg, dying in office and having Trump name a conservative, they want Stephen Breyer to leave office. He's not going to do that, but to leave the court so Biden could have a Supreme Court choice approved by a Democratic Senate.
There's so much to talk about. I hope you come back.
I know. I heard. I understand that we're not only are we once a month. We're starting next week. We're doing it daily. Is that correct? We're doing the show daily.
I wish. I wish.
You wish.
But
you wish.
But come back. Come back. See you in a few weeks. Take care, Ken Rudin.
Thanks, Ann Fisher.
Ken Rudin, political journalist, host of Ken Rudin's Political Junkie podcast. We'll have a link to that on our website at wosu.org/allsides. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.